Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, August the 7th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 91, the last paragraph, starting with, "When he sees you know," reading through two paragraphs ending on page 92 with, "Little chance he can recover by himself." And the comments will be on both paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Matt M., the 12 Traditions, Susan R., and readers of the text are Robin P., John K., and Sherry KB. The share ID for Monday, August the 6th at the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,753. That is 11753. And for Tuesday, August 7th, that's today, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 11,758, 11758. The way preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Matt M. to read the 12 steps.
Can you hear me, Mo?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Thank you for your service. Good morning, everyone. This is Matt M., a compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Here are the steps that's adopted for Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admit it, we are powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, train to believe that a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so, we injure them by others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Someone is unmuted. Please press star 1 to mute your phone. That may have been Susan R. Hey, Susan R.
Hi, good morning. This is Susan R. Yep.
Thank you.
Hi. Okay. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our group, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, a public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to share and do service.
Thank you, Susan R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 91, starting with the last paragraph. When he sees you know all about drinking, and we'll be reading through two paragraphs ending on page 92, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And I will now ask Robin P. to get us started.
Thanks so much, Mo. May I be heard?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. This is Robin P. in Los Angeles. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thanks so much. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he's an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you're satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless features of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to the book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he's not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance that he can recover by himself. Hmm. I'm Robin. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Los Angeles, and thanks so much for allowing me to do service today. This is so helpful. I'm very grateful, as I've shared before, that the only thing that my sponsor asked me when I asked her if she would be my sponsor, she said, "Are you desperate enough to go to any length to recover?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And I have sponsored, you know, quite a few people at this point, and some people, you know, I asked them to pray about it, and some people, to me, I would think, oh my gosh, that should be their bottom, but it's not up to me, it's up to them to see if they really believe that they're a compulsive overeater and they're powerless over food and their life has become unmanageable. It's not my decision, and I've had to learn this through a lot of working with others. You know, it's been such a life lesson for me. It's not when I decide that they're a compulsive overeater. It's when they decide. And so I can think, oh, my gosh, they're 300 pounds and they can't walk. Surely that's their bottom. And it isn't for them. And they'll say, I wish I knew, but I don't. I wish I was willing to go to any lengths, but I'm not. And I'm grateful that they're honest because it's so then I can go work with someone who is ready. Because that's the gift of desperation. It's got to be that insists that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Because I think that was that desperate, hope for, at least for me. I can, you know what, I'll do this. I'm plan D, plan Z. You know, then I ran out of letters in the alphabet. You know, and so what I needed to know was that I could not do this by myself. Because the fear, you know, so it's that mental twist combined with the physical allergy. And the mental twist was all of those determinations. I can do this by myself because of the character defects of selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. The last thing I wanted to do was to go and trust somebody and ask them for help. I wanted to be able to do this by myself. I don't need anybody else. And so when I surrendered fully and said, can you please help me? I know that I am a true compulsive overeater and my life has become unmanageable. And I am desperate enough to go to any lengths. Yes, I'll pick up the phone instead of the food. I'll go work these steps to the best of my ability. And then I'll go sponsor other people and help other people and carry that message, which was so freely given to me. I'll go pass it on. I'm willing to do whatever it takes so that I won't have to try to pretend that I can recover by myself. So with that, I pass. I'm Robin. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater, and thanks so much for letting me share.
Oh, Robin, thank you. That was perfect timing.
Oh, yay.
And I want to remind everybody where we're at. We're commenting on paragraphs, starting on page 91, at the bottom of the page, when he sees you know all about drinking or all about eating, and ending on page 92, the bottom of the first paragraph, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And I'll now take names for those who'd like to share.
Freya H. M.
John K. I got two people before John K. Give me again.
Freya.
Wendy M. And who was the other one?
It's Freya.
F-R-E-Y-A.
You got it.
Oh, good. And what's your last initial?
It's H.
H. Okay. Freya H. Wendy M. John K.
Miriam Rifka H.
Miriam Rifka.
Tossie P.
Kathy. Was that Kathy?
It's Tossie, starts with a T like Thomas.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Thank you.
Taffy P. Miriam Rifka. A couple more.
Patty T.
Patty?
Patty, uh-huh.
Okay, gotcha, Patty. All right, we'll stop there. Okay, I have Freya H., Wendy M., John K., Miriam Rifka, Taffy P., and Patty T. All right, Freya H., I'll have you start, and we'll be followed by Wendy M.
Thank you so much. This is Freya H. in Colorado. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Freya.
Great. Thank you so much for your service. Really grateful for the opportunity to share. I've never shared on the line before. I listen every day, and young kids in the background, so I may get interrupted, so I'll try to keep it quick, but I was able to listen to the earlier meeting and just was feeling really inspired, and that idea that that I really don't know what's best for anybody else. It says so many places in this book that, you know, we have no monopoly on God, that it says we don't. But this is not the only way. So when I first came into program, I thought everybody needed it. You know, I thought that I could look at someone and say, oh, well, they need these rooms. And I'm really grateful that that's not the way that I approach this program anymore, that really I can see that there are, you know, this is, all I know is that this is what works for me and that I'm so grateful that I found it and that I have not wanted to leave I don't have a lot of experience with other things, but there are other people who that they work for them, and that's, you know, I believe that's how God works. There's not just one way. So So for me to assume that I know what's best for someone else is, you know, that's my arrogance or my fear. So really coming to, like, in my heart believing, even if I'm talking to someone who it seems like shares this disease, just really knowing I do not know what's best for them. I just get to share my own experience. That's what I hear. It says, you know, let him draw his own conclusion. And if he thinks that he can, you know, that he can control it, then, you know, maybe he can. I don't know. I have to reserve my judgment or my opinions. All I know is my own experience, and I get to keep the focus on me. And the other, in my experience with sponsoring earlier in program, was very much that it was about me. And if my sponsee wasn't doing well, it must be because I wasn't doing or saying the right thing. I was really trying to be their higher power. And I was actually really scared of this chapter for a long time because I felt like it was a really tall order that, you know, all the things it was telling me that I had to do, especially where it talks about later, you know, like taking alcoholics into your home and, you know, lending them money, all that stuff. So thankfully, I don't have to do that today. I just have to share my experience and let God be in charge of other people's recovery. So with that, I will pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Freya H., and welcome to the line lively. Wendy M., followed by John K.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, God, for entire abstinence. Thank you, Mo, on the line for your service, everybody else. Mm-hmm. Glad to be here. So the line that sticks out for me would be, let him draw his own conclusion. And, you know, what I was told, you know, sometimes, I want to draw your conclusion for you. And sometimes as a sponsor, I'll be on the line and my prospect is talking and I feel like we're not getting to the conclusion. So I want to diagnose them and tell them what the conclusion is. And that's never going to be helpful. And it's a very powerful thing to say, let them draw their own conclusion. Let them diagnose for themselves. You know, it never worked when somebody in my life would say, you know, you're overweight, you really need to stop eating. I never wanted anyone to tell me what to do, especially if it had to do with food or my body or weight. You know, my denial was working for a long time, and then I was desperate enough that I finally concluded that I needed this program and I needed entire abstinence. And when we conclude that, when I draw my own conclusion, it's how honest do I want to be, right? I can draw a conclusion and be partly honest, or I can draw a conclusion and be entirely honest. And when I get to entire honesty, it means that I get to have that freedom, right? That how free do you want to be freedom that you get in this program. And I also, you know, want to say also with foods, like it's not my place to tell a sponsee what foods they can and can't eat, or what all I can do in this program is share my experience, right? I don't have to make this up as I go. I don't have to make up a story. I just tell them my experience, and my experience is obviously my strength, right? And it's always going to be the answer, and the prospect wants to hear my experience. They don't want to hear me trying to convince them, trying for me to build a case, trying to convert them. I'm not responsible for anybody else's recovery, right? And that's not just true in this program, but for me, this step is also how to relate to another human being, right? I only have my experience to share when someone calls me, whether it's an OA call or a regular just friendship call. It is not my place. I am not responsible for their recovery in any way, shape, or form. All I have is my experience. And again, I don't have to make anything up. And sometimes it's just listening is the answer. And then finally, the mental twist that they speak of. I mean, all I have to do is tell my prospect that I'm driving 60 miles an hour, maybe 65, probably 70. And a piece of my weighed and measured apple falls to the floor. And I'm willing to search for that apple piece because it's mine and risk my life and the life of other people on the road. That's the insanity of this disease. And all I have to do is share those stories and they smile, they understand, and they feel less alone in the world. And they feel like they belong and that there is a real answer. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Wendy M. John K., followed by Miriam Rifka.
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. This is such a perfect description of 12-step recovery, you know, one recovered person working with another. You know, you tell your story to me, I identify with it and think, yeah, this guy's gone through what I have. And that's so important, you know. There's this great AA pamphlet I love to read sometimes to people. It was written by an AA member here in Los Angeles who was a psychologist giving a talk to students who were becoming substance abuse counselors on how AA worked. And in it, he had this great description of Bill's first meeting with Dr. Bob. And let me get it here. It says, much more important than what was said that evening was who was saying it. Long before the average alcoholic walks through the doors of his first AA meeting, he has sought help from others or had help offered to him, or in some cases, forced on him. But these helpers were always superior beings, spouses, parents, physicians, even bartenders. The moral culpability of the alcoholic and the moral superiority of the helper, even though unstated, is always clearly understood. The overtone of parental disapproval and discipline from these authority figures is always present. But for the first time, an alcoholic suddenly heard a different drummer. Instead of the rat-tat-tat of, this is what you should do, he heard the instantly recognizable voice saying, this is what I did. And boy, that's what I needed, you know. I know all the crap I used to hear. I'm sure most of you did. Oh, you have such a nice face. If only you'd lose some weight. Why don't you eat less? I mean, geez, I'm fat, not stupid, you know. And I'll tell you now, when I talk to a newcomer and prospect, I tell them how I dug things half eaten out of the garbage. And then they know I'm one of them. You know, when they hear me talk about wearing out my pants in the crotch because my thighs rub together, you know, they get that I'm one of them. They see my pictures, they know I'm one of them. The most important thing is when they look at me and through my appearance I don't look like one of them, it tells them that this program works. You know, now this is only the physical part of the recovery, but let's face it, that's what most newcomers are interested in anyway. But, you know, to help people, I got to have something to transmit. You know, you can't transmit something you haven't got. And, you know, I'm in the recovery for my own sanity and maybe a little vanity, but my physical recovery can actually help others. And I do this, you know, because it's helping my program to work with others. Because, you know, you never know, that newcomer or prospect I'm working with today might sometime later, you know, save my life. And anyway, with that, I pass.
Thank you, John K. Miriam Rifka, followed by Taffy P. Miriam Rifka.
Hi, thank you so much. This is Miriam Rifka H. in New Jersey. I just wanted to share that I know that these paragraphs are true based on my own experience when I was the sponsee going through the steps. And I know I've been in these rooms for 5.5 years. I'm only recovered. The most recent abstinence is 15 months or so, you know, so I'm recovered less than that, obviously. And it took me a very long time. I had all kinds of sponsors that had the most wonderful messages, but I had not diagnosed myself. It was more like, thank you for the information. That's all very nice. And now I'm going to take that and I will fix myself. I'm going to be okay. And I wasn't even realizing the self-will. To me, it was like, I'm going to get the best sponsor and be really clean about, you know, committing my food or whatever it was, without really recognizing that I'm really powerless, that I really have this problem, and no amount of tools, of support, of fellowship, even while working the steps, is going to help me. Because I didn't have that step one, that real recognition of powerless, that I really am totally, totally at a brick wall. You know, I had to really recognize that I will never, ever, 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 ever stop eating the way I was unless something changes, something big changes. And no one else was able to give that to me. So I had the most wonderful sponsors, but I wasn't able to do that. And I remember so many times calling people desperate after another binge and another binge, and they would say to me something like, you know, which echoes what we're reading here, you might not be ready yet, you know, because they couldn't give me that. And I would want to punch them in the face because I felt ready, but I wasn't. I didn't really see that I was totally, totally powerless. And I'm grateful that I kept coming back here and I kept hearing everyone's messages. And yes, you know, as was described, by looking at all these people and hearing all of you guys in the rooms describing the insanity, I love the examples people are giving. Yes, you know, yes, all of that I identify with. And now you're telling me you're recovered and you have a different life. Like, I have to check this out. And that's why we're on that now. You know, I'm grateful that today I am one of those people that gets to say that I am not compulsively eating and I don't want to. And it's nothing that I did. It was done for me. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Miriam Rivka H. And we now have Taffy P. followed by Patty T. Taffy.
Hi, this is Tassie in Ohio, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you for letting me share. I am in the midst of doing a 30 and 30 myself for the first time ever, and I am super appreciating these meetings, being here, and all the wisdom that I'm getting from them. Today, I really like today's reading because I'm working with a sponsee, and I have been struggling for a while with how to be confident that I'm doing the right things for her. She's struggling, and I guess I know that it's not my responsibility to have entire control over getting her over the hump and, you know, helping her to find her way. But listening to this chapter being read over the last week and reflecting on it and listening to all of you, it's just become clearer and clearer the bottom line, that it's about me sharing what I know to be true from my own experience, and it's about the focus on that desperation and that need to do or desire to do anything or willingness to do anything in order to recover. And I have found myself feeling a lot more at peace lately talking to her, and a lot more confident that I'm focusing on the right thing, because now I'm focusing on trying to make a connection or facilitate for her a connection between her and her higher power by sharing specific things from my own life, specific things that I have felt that sound like the things that she, you know, she will say something and I will say something that's about my own experience. And that seems to, talking about my experience more than I had been, seems to be resonating with her better. And also, she does sound desperate to me right now. She describes herself as desperate and as willing to do whatever it takes. And that, partially because I've asked her, but she was using the word desperate before I asked her. And I think that she's more willing to focus on that desperation as she gets, you know, and is more free too, with the reminders that she's not the only person that's felt this way, that it is possible to feel that awful and that stuck as she does, and still then feel differently later, still then recover, still then feel better, and that the way to do that is by taking the steps of this program, and that has worked for at least one other human being whom she's talking to. And it makes me feel, that's the type of thing she's been saying to me, and I feel much more like I know what I'm doing now when I'm not, because it's my job to keep the focus there, to keep the focus on my own experience, to keep the focus on her attempts to connect with her higher power. I hope that, you know, this will be a turning point for her, but even if it's not, I feel more confident from having listened to these words again and listening to all of your reflections about them, about how, what my role is supposed to be in supporting her attempts to recover. And anyway, I'm very grateful, and I am grateful to all of you, and I pass. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Taffy P. And Patty T., you're next, and then we'll open the lines up for more.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Mo. Good morning, everybody. This is Patty T., recovered in North Hollywood, California. You know, I love this idea of sharing your story, but I have to tell you, I was born not only with this disease, but with the chronic gift of gab. And there are times when speaking to fellows or newcomers or sponsees that, boy, I take off and I don't stop for the next 10 minutes. And then they might get a word in. And I've really had to work and pray. Actually, right now I'm doing that, to pray, to learn how to have conversation, to learn how to listen, as well as instruct or share. You know, it's really important to listen. And I know that because I listened. You know, when my first sponsor said to me, "What are you going to eat today?" I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And I didn't think that was important. And then she explained to me why, right? And then, you know, that's how it started. And when I would have a problem, you know, I would tell her about it, and she would listen. And then she would share her experience, strength, and hope with me. And our call was limited to 15 minutes. And I got so much out of that. And then I had another sponsor, and the same thing, and another sponsor, and the same thing. And, you know, I'm coming back, found abstinence after 6 years of chronic relapse. And the one thing that I finally got was that gift of desperation, that gift of saying, I cannot live like this anymore. And it wasn't even about the food anymore. It was about the state of mind. And that mental twist it talks about, I was like, why did I just do that? I was completely unaware of it. But then if I track it back, I go, oh, that's the disease. And so I can share that stuff. I can share that stuff with fellows and with sponsees. But I need to also allow them to share with me, because I don't know where they are until I share them. And so this aspect of the work really teaches me how to recover even more. Thanks, I'll pass.
Well, thank you very much, Patty T. And I'll remind everybody where we're at. We are on page 91, the last paragraph, starting with "When he sees you know all about drinking." Reading through two paragraphs, ending on page 92, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And I'm now open for more shares.
Larry K.
Shannon S.
Who was after Larry?
Shannon S.
Okay, Shannon, thanks. I have Larry K. and Shannon S. Press star 1 to unmute.
Sherry K. B.
Thank you, Sherry. We could take a couple of more. Press star 1. Anyone want to share? Now's your chance.
Joanne B.
Joanne B.
Carla S.
Carla?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Carla. We'll stop there. Thank you. I now have Larry K., Shannon S., Sherry KB, Joanne B., and Carla S. Larry K., you're on.
All right. Well, thank you for your service. I do appreciate it. The, you know, there's a couple of things here. There's a couple of critical questions when I'm carrying the message. I need to draw the distinction for folks between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Question number one. Now, I can take something very simple and build a beautiful, lovely, you know, complex situation out of that. But that doesn't help me. It doesn't help them, certainly. But I can also create some simplicity. Question number one is quite simple. And it goes something like this. It's in the big book. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Or question number two, if when drinking, or in our case eating, you have little control over the amount you take, well, then you're probably an alcoholic. You're probably one of us. But you get to diagnose yourself. And if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. When it's laid out that way, see, I remember all too well. Now, I could eat a spear of broccoli. I might even eat 3 spears of broccoli, and I could stop on a dime, and I never wanted more. Maybe you're different than me. Now, if I had one Oreo, the only time I had one Oreo is if it was the last one in the package. I never knew what it was like to have one of those types of things. And when I start to try to manage my life, eating is going to feel like a step up. And it did, and I could not outrun this disease. And I tell folks that I got here, like most people, on a prodigious losing streak of some kind. And maybe my losing streak looks different than yours. I don't know. Mine was, I was about 100 pounds heavier. I was miserable emotionally. I couldn't control my emotional nature much. You know, I busted some windshields along the way with my fist. Couldn't control my anger. I'm not that same man anymore. I was emotionally detached most of the time. I look really good on paper. I want you to know I'm a very, very important man in my mind. And I only wanted you to see the very best in me because I sought out your validation. And I tell them all about myself and my experience, and some of that may resonate with them on some level. We are the message. We are a link in this chain. You know, there's no hierarchy. There's no self-appointed, individuals that come into this program. There's no self-anointed folks here. We're just people that got here on a losing streak of some kind. And maybe you, there's my timer. I'll just wrap up. Maybe you had a roof over your head or degrees behind your name, but what difference does it make? You couldn't stop when you wanted to, and you couldn't stop from starting again. And it's those types of conversations that benefit people. I know they benefited me. So anyways, grateful for this program. I'm not the same guy. I didn't earn an A in this deal, but I didn't need to. Just needed to follow the instructions precisely. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Larry K. Nice to have you on the 10 a.m. meeting. Shannon S., followed by Sherry K.B.
Good morning. This is Shannon S., recovered compulsive overeater and anorexic in New York. Thanks, Mo, for your service, and thanks, everybody, for being here. These paragraphs, of course, they remind me of working with my sponsees, but even more so, I'm reminded that this information is usable and very appropriate and a good idea for me to be using with everyone in my life. So, my dishonesty a lot of the times is thinking that I know best for other people and diagnosing people. And as the book clearly states, this is something that is a self-diagnosis. And, just like the spiritual experience description in Appendix 2, where it talks about, you will often, the other people around the newcomer will observe changes first and things that, might take place with a few years of self-will and just hammering ourselves occur in a short period of time when we're working the spiritual program and relying on God. So, in any case, I'm reminded that with people the closest to me, that is the hardest place for me to work my program. And it's much easier to follow these things with a sponsee who, first of all, doesn't live in my home. Second of all, is not a close loved one. So I'm already detached. And they're already in program. So although not everybody recovers in program, like my mindset is, well, at least they're in program. At least they recognize that there's an issue that they're looking to solve, hopefully. But with other people, particularly my husband, my kids, people living in my house, this stuff still applies. No, they're not my sponsees, first of all, so that's even more that I need to zip it. And second of all, they don't need me mommying them. So one of some other of my main defects fit into the M's: mommying, managing, martyrdom, and can't remember the other one. But in any case, with my husband, like, I'm very quick to diagnose his problems and let him know what he needs to do. And you know what? Like, if I spot it, I got it. So I need to be turning that back around and say, all right, what do I need to do? And take the focus off of other people. And as we continue reading and getting into Two Wives and the Family afterwards, that gives me a model for how to treat and interact with my loved ones. And so if I'm asked, then you know what? I can share my experience, strength, and hope. But just because somebody is not a sponsee of mine does not give me a free pass to go around giving my advice and thinking that I can diagnose and tell everybody what to do, because I don't know that. I know what's worked for me, but that doesn't mean that that is the prescription for everyone else. And certainly my role is not to be walking around with my cape on as Superwoman to try to save everybody. You know, I'm grateful that God has saved me, and I'm saved today from the hopeless state of mind and body one day at a time. And I got to stay connected to God so that I can keep that channel open. And there's no way that I can do that when I'm focused on everybody else. So I'm really taking this out and need to work on it in all my affairs, practicing in all my affairs. Thanks a lot, and I'll pass.
And thank you, Shannon S. Sherry KB, followed by Joanne B.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater, and thanks so much for your service, Mo, and everybody on the line. For me, these paragraphs are so powerful. I mean, the whole book is powerful. I love the directions in this book. And I like this part. It says, be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Because what I do when I work with people or start to work with people, I describe, unless they've been on this line specifically, unless they've been on this line, I do a different approach. But if they haven't been, I, you know, describe my own history of my compulsive overeating, and I tell them that I am a true compulsive overeater. This is how I know. And so I know that is, you know, when I work with people, it's not my job. I don't do God's job. I do God's work. And so I can't brand another person a compulsive overeater. They have to decide for themselves. But I'll tell them that, you know, there's a big book and there's this page that I read about my disease and the doctor's opinion about the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind. I'll tell them about on page 24 when it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of a week ago or a month ago. We are without defense the first drink. And it's got my name on there. My picture is actually by that page. I'm not kidding you. Because for years, that's what I did. And I'll explain to somebody, this is what I did. I did some, and I tell them all the crazy things that I've done to control. And that's what it talks about in the mental twist, is about trying to control. And that's on page 30 on more about alcoholism. Because I just, you know, if I had to sit here and try to control all this, and I lost my timing, if you could let me know, Mo, please.
Mm-hmm,
If I could control this, I would have. I absolutely would have controlled this, but I can't. I can't do it. And the more I wanted to control, the more I realized how out of control I was. And so, you know, all I can do is describe my experience, strength, and hope, and not try to tell them what they are or they're not, and just say, I don't know if you've done this or had this or you feel this way, but I've also learned, too, that the mind that has the problem can't be the mind that can solve the problem. It's, you know, that's Albert Einstein. And just that I can't, and if they're severely affected by this disease, that I know that I'll tell them I was severely affected by this disease and I can't recover by myself. I cannot do this alone. I tried. It doesn't work for me. And without a higher power, without working with somebody to help me with this, I can't do it alone. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. Joanne B., followed by Carla S.
Hi, this is Joanne B. from Texas. Thank you for your service and for all those who have shared. The part that sticks out to me is tell him how baffled I was and about my sickness. And I see this whole, there's like a list, you know, of things to do, of five things on that first paragraph. I've always had a really hard time with elevator speeches with my business or with anything, and now especially with my own of how to share this message of hope with people and knowing my own story. And I think it's because it's definitely because of my warped thinking and what I think other people are expecting of me or whatever, I don't know. But just while we were reading this passage today, I was thinking about what someone said to me yesterday about to find my ideal for relationship. And it got me thinking about what's my ideal of my story. And so I started numbering each of the different things, like describe myself as an alcoholic and then tell him how baffled I was. And, tell him how I learned that I was sick, and et cetera. And it's interesting to see that if I look at it as I need to really sit down and do this and tell myself these things as well so I know what my elevator speech is, I guess it would overwhelm me. But why not sit down and just write and ask myself, what is my account of struggles? Or, how does that mental twist affect me? Because I know how it affects me. I just need to write it down so I know how to verbalize it. It's some of these things. I think that I have to have all these answers immediately right away and be able to verbalize well immediately. And my brain doesn't work that way. And I need to... first of all, give myself some mercy, and second, take some time and just, know that it's important that I do this so that I can not only help someone else, but also know where I am and where God is growing and changing me. And anyway, thank you for letting me share, and with that, I cast.
Thank you, Joanne B. And Carla S., you'll take us out.
Hi, I'm Carla S. in Washington State. First name spelled with a K.
Okay. Thanks.
That's okay. Most people spell it with a C. The part that jumped out to me was show him the twist, the mental twist, which leads to the first drink of a spree. I've been in and out of the rooms for several years, probably at least a decade at this point. And when I first came into the rooms and I heard people talking about things that I would never talk about to anyone, as far as, eating out of the trash or, doing the drive-through and getting the multiple drinks so it doesn't look like you're buying as much, or you're buying for a family rather, that I immediately identified with and I stayed with, but it helped me identify as a compulsive eater and stay at the meetings for a while. But what I didn't hear people talk about was the mental twist and how that first led to the spree when you didn't want to eat or you had a plan and all of a sudden you were eating again. I missed that. And it wasn't until I started really listening to A Vision for You that mental twist piece really became highlighted for me. And even I started listening a little over a year ago, and then I had a relapse, and I'm just a few days abstinent again. But what I heard while listening again was someone who did a presentation on powerlessness, and he really emphasized the obsession. And for the first time, I was sort of able to see that obsession almost like from the outside looking in and seeing that my whole life was an obsession. And I obsessed about the food, but basically everything else. I went from one obsession to the other in my life. And when I finally saw that, I realized what a big problem I have, and that really emphasized, yeah, I'm powerless. This brain cannot fix this problem. So that's all I wanted to share today. Thanks, everyone.
All right, thank you. Well, that opens it up. We have time for a two-minute share if somebody would like to take that.
Hi, Abby F.
Abby F?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll let you go. You got 2 minutes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. My name's Abby S. I'm a compulsive overeater from New York.
Grateful to hear all of you, and just grateful to hear about the mental twist and what it means to share the experience with someone else. I'm a teacher, so sometimes I think I'm supposed to teach everyone in the world, and one of the things I came up with in my step work was that, like, actually that doesn't work. It's not my job to teach other people how to be, how to do. It's just, in terms of program, just my job to share my experience. And this chapter reminds me of that. And for today, I just want to remember that mental twist, the obsession, all of that, and really grateful for your service. Thanks.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Abby F. And I want to thank all those who shared today and those who gave service on this line, Matt M., Susan R., Robin P., John K., and Sherry KB. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will John K. please read A Vision for You?
I certainly will. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.